Welcome to Minority Corner. With Aneke
and James. Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, gay,
and ladylike.
That's all you got?
I'm keeping it super business professional today.
Oh, business professional.
Yes.
She's keeping it serious today. No jokes, just facts. She's business professional lady.
I'm wearing a suit.
And I'm naked and keeping it loose.
This week on Minority Corner.
What are you doing, Vanessa Huxtable?
I know, I got the hair. I got the hair and the look today.
Aside from looking like you were straight out of the Huxtables with your Vanessa Huxtable hairdo, I am feeling it, Tempest Bloodstone.
I am talking about this article that I found in Latina Magazine about the massacre of hundreds of thousands of Mexican Americans during the early 1900s, which is mirroring sort of the paranoia and scared weird shit about our border patrol. So I thought it'd be time to bring up this story again.
Good call, because history has a funny way of repeating itself, because people don't seem to remember unless you've got a pamphlet or a podcast.
You darn tootin', and you know who the president that really liked a pamphlet was?
Abraham Lincoln, in case you missed it.
So what are you talking about?
Well, in honor of Black History Month, I was so inspired with what we talked about last week with the Pomo Afro Homos.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Bayard Rustin, who is pretty much the brother outsider. So if I ask you who actually really organized the Million Man March, you might say Martin Luther King, but he was busy doing other things. So Bayard, Mr. Rustin, if you're nasty, he's a like a me. He's got the intersectionality thing going for him. He is an activist on the black front and the gay front. And this is like back
in
the 60s and even further. So we have a lot of ground to cover. And you know what? Because us queer folk, we get left out of the conversation on both in Black History Month and even like in LGBT history as well. But especially like in Black History, like we are left out of the conversation.
You need to put queer folks back into the conversation.
Yes, that's right. Don't take us out. Put us back in the conversation. So we're talking about brother outsider himself, Bayard Rustin.
I love it.
Yeah.
I am so excited.
Well, let's get over there, Rudy Huxtable. We got a lot to cover.
I'm just switching all the different siblings now. You're just putting me...
You're now Shonda.
Just putting Denise, me in all of them.
Maxine Huxtable.
Now we're in a different show. Now we're in Living Single.
No. A different world. Woo. What? Where you come from?
We need to go to the corners because we're about to go through all the black shows.
Black mega mix here. Martin.
No.
Homeboys from outer space. Martin, I want you to have your own, like, black lady half-hour sitcom theme song. I think it'd be like...
Okay, let me think of one. I think I got
she's
it.
She's got the looks, she's got the books, it's a necky.
All right, you got it, because that's better than anything I could come up with.
Well, what did you have?
I don't know. I was going to freestyle it. Probably like, she's running around in the Bay Area.
She's got the looks. She's got the books. Aneke.
That's all I need.
See, there it is.
I think
there
I need that every time I walk into a room.
And it's just that, yes, it's just that on like repeat. And it's got like some piano and some like jazz and like a soulful singer.
Yeah, and at the end, it's all like, people... da 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 da.
Yeah. And it's a lot of people just doing like, random everyday things, the simple task.
Like, but like with like a dance, like jazz dance
yes.
to it. Like I want right. like it's a musical. I want some like backflips randomly when I'm walking down the street.
And then for like your co-stars, it's like them like folding laundry and they stop to like look at the camera and look up. And Andrew.
I like that.
I want to be trying to walk across the street, but then a car comes by, and then I put my hands on my hips, and I just shake my head no. I'm like, can't make it across.
Like, you almost get sprayed with water, and it's one of those, and then you're like,
Close call.
Yeah.
And then it gets me anyways, and then I'm just like, you got
James.
Me.
Yeah, that's every yours.
Time. Classic. Love it.
You know what? I needed so that because I've been giving a lot of library presentations lately, and you know what? The students are not amused.
Oh, well, tell them you have your own half-hour sitcom that you're working on called Aneke.
I need to.
And then just go whisper into their ear. I hear she's got the books and she's got the looks. Just whisper that into their ear.
Her name's Aneke.
If it's not true, they wouldn't put it in a theme song. Like, that's where the facts are. Like,
that's where, yes.
Like, if it's not in a theme song, it's not true.
I highly question any facts that aren't put in a theme song.
If it's not in the theme song, I don't trust it.
I don't.
I don't.
That's
I don't trust it.
That's a terrible source outside of a theme song.
Check your sources. Speaking of things that I do trust, though.
Oh, what's that? What do you trust?
Look at this segue. Ooh, look at this one. This is not a good segue at all, but... I just finished watching The People vs. OJ. Did you see it?
I did. Okay, so I watched both. I watched the American Crime Story with Cuba Gooding Jr.
And then I did you watch the documentary that came out too, shortly
but
after?
I needed to take a space break because I was like, this is too much OJ. Mm.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. A lot of OJ. A lot of juice. Okay, I'm so glad that you saw it because I would love to discuss
it. Let's talk some OJ.
Okay, well... I was actually a little bit skeptical at first when this was coming out because I was like, ugh, why are we revisiting this? Do we need to go back to this? And I did not trust Ryan Murphy at the time because I was skeptical about how he views black people because I've not seen a lot of diverse representation in telling black stories.
Sometimes I think he thinks we're a joke.
Right. Like you look at some of the characters he's used and like the lack of like black male representation. But then you know what? I was hooked 1 minute in because
it was good.
The first scene, it was... He set it this entire, it's on Netflix, everybody. Definitely take a look at it. He set the whole entire thing. It starts off with the Rodney King riots.
Right.
So he said, this is the world that this exists in. These riots happen.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about racism, police brutality, and the so-called justice system.
Yeah.
And that put it into context for me. And I was like, okay, I think you know what you're doing. Okay. All right.
Oh, you're a little, so you're giving a little sly smile. You're like,
I was like, I see what you're doing.
Okay. I see you.
And I thought the guy who played Johnny Cochran, Courtney B. Vance, was amazing.
Yeah, he's an amazing actor, and he's married to Angela Bassett, so
what?
Those two...
Stop
yes.
it.
Yes.
Stop it. Wow.
Power couple.
They're the most talented actors, like acting couple on the face of the earth. Move over, Brangelina.
No,
we got...
well, they're already broken up.
True. But we got Ass Ants.
Okay.
Or what's their couple name? Courtney Bay Vance. Wait, no.
Vance Ass.
What was it? It'd be Ass Me. Ass Me.
Yeah, or like Bat. Bat.
Core. Court.
Now we're just making noises.
Cuckoo.
Not
cuckoo.
God. Boo. Bah.
Hushala. Well, they're the new thing. Oh, and that makes sense because Angela Bassett's all hanging out with Ryan Murphy on American Horror Story, and she's like, hey, look at my talented ass husband. Oh, and you know what? Sarah Paulson. Can we talk about Sarah Paulson for a second?
I love her.
I love Sarah Paulson. I love her. I think she's an amazing actor. But I will tell you this.
Yeah.
I've never actually enjoyed any role or character she's played.
Mm.
I've never enjoyed any of her characters. But I like her as an actor. Like, I like you. I like what you're doing.
Yeah.
I see your work. I see your craft. I just like any of your characters.
But your roles need work.
Yes. But her Marcia Clark was amazing.
She did a really good job. She, like... gave vulnerability and like fucking strength to this woman that I didn't even know.
Absolutely.
I just was just the curly hair and was like kind of stern.
Yeah.
That's who I saw her as.
And I remember as a kid that like she had a bad rap. Like I remember that as a kid, I knew a lot of people in my world being, you know, living up in the black community did not care.
Black world.
Yes. The black world. Not a fan of Marcia Clark.
No. Or Christopher Darden.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Oof. Don't envy him, but I also have mixed feelings about him. But talking about Marcia, I think in general, I thought it was so interesting. That was back in like the early 90s, and Marcia Clark was ridiculed for her appearance a lot.
Which is terrible,
and
right?
The same thing that they were doing with Hillary Clinton. They were like...
Right.
It was interesting because these powerful women still being relegated to their appearance, no one was like, look at that suit that Johnny Cochran's wearing.
Right?
Or Dave Shapiro looks grumpy and unpleasant.
Or like, Chris Darden, what are you doing with your beard?
Yes, not at all. And what was he doing with that beard? And I thought it was interesting... because I think she was able to bring, like you said, vulnerability to Marcia Clark and make her this full-fledged person. She had her own personal, like, life struggles, things that were happening. She had her own attachments to the case, being a survivor of assault. It was also just such an interesting story. I think this is my favorite Ryan Murphy series because it's so interesting because I think he really showed how this event... It showed the human beings behind it, all these people who were so affected.
Yeah.
And I found myself rooting and understanding everyone. It was just such a complex situation. There weren't any villains per se, except for Mark Furman.
Right.
It was just, this is a really crazy situation and scenario that is affecting everybody and is so layered with racism and the police and this murder that happened and also like fame and sexism and class. It was just so layered because this wasn't about OJ. It was about so much more. Right. He was like the vehicle for all these struggles to come to a head. And it was so intense, even though like I knew what was going to happen next. Like, you know, I knew how the trial was going to work out or what the verdict was or the Bronco chase. Like, I was edge of the seat. It was so intense.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because as I was watching it, as a black man, I knew that he needed to get off. And again, this wasn't about OJ, but for the black community, this trial, he represented so much more because when we talk about justice and the justice system, and I was watching that Oprah interview with Ava DuVernay, about 13th, they talk about the documentary 13th.
Excellent. Watch it, please.
So good. It's just 30 minutes. And watching these two amazing women.
Powerhouse.
And it's fun because, like, Oprah was, like, learning from Ava. And she was like, well, girl, how did you get them to open up? And then Ava was like, well, this is what I did, girl. This is what I did.
Can I just do a sidetrack? What is going really on like with Oprah? She is doing these commercials for Weight Watchers, and I'm like, girl, you got so much money.
But you know what? I think she's trying to rebuild that empire.
She's coming back. She's coming back. She's going to be on 60 Minutes.
But you know, Oprah's like, shit, I gotta make some more money because the network wasn't making as much money as like. I think the network was ahead of its time. I think if her show had just ended now, she would be just like a subscription package or like do a little one-off like Netflix series or have her own like little thing on Hulu.
Right.
But instead, she came out too early. The option wasn't available then. She's like, I'm going to launch a huge network. And it's been this huge sort of undertaking. So she's trying to cash them checks where she can.
It's true.
But Ava DuVernay commented about how only 97% of people who are in prison never even had a trial.
I know. Isn't that like the most insane statistic ever?
It's insane. And I don't want people to think that I'm being heartless when I say it's not like I don't want justice for people who have been murdered. But when a murder has happened, our justice system, how do you necessarily get justice? Like, I don't believe in our criminal justice system enough that I really believe that, you know, someone does something, they do a crime, and that the correct punishment will be allocated or, you know, my reformation or whatever is supposed to happen. I think the whole entire system really needs complete reexamining because those people aren't coming back. Like, what is the learning lesson? Where is, I guess, the growth? And I don't think that our justice system is the best in delivering any of that equally and fairly.
Because I feel you. It's like, it's one of those things where it's so flawed.
Right.
That we don't know if a sentence is truly appropriate for the crime because there's so many wild, disproportionate ways that it has happened. Yes. Like if it's this person, it's usually this amount of time. If it's that person, they usually get off. If it happened in this area, then this person is going to more likely be accused of it. And if it happened in that area, it's like, it's so dependent on who is the jury, who is the judge, who your lawyers are,
who you can afford. And it comes down to money. That trial is fucking expensive. OJ had money. And like, here you had this rich black man who was able to pay for this expensive, you know, lawyers and possibly get away with, or I don't know what happened. But the idea was that like a black man was able to beat a system that was not defined for him or was not created for him. Like, you know, these, you know, rich white men get away with crimes all the fucking time.
He had to be OJ, who was somebody who literally got to such a level that he went away from race, I feel like.
Right, yeah, totally. They, mm-hmm. Which happens sometimes, what they try to do with some of our celebrities, like they did with, like, they tried to do with Beyonce. And she was like, hold up, I'm black. She's like, formation, you better get up in formation. And also, what I love is that it helped me learn so much about Johnny Cochran. Like, he was amazing. Yeah. Civil rights activist, lawyer guy, just fucking phenomenal. Because I was a kid when this happened, and all I knew, there was an O.J. Simpson trial. It was interrupting my Disney afternoon cartoons. It was interrupting all television all the time. This is also like the birth of reality television. Like, everything had stopped. They were airing the cameras from the courtroom. It was like the birth of, like, this is how court TV got started.
Right.
The NBA finals had got stopped for the chase sequence, the Bronco chase.
I mean, like, James, I will always remember a couple of events. I'll remember the 1989 earthquake.
Mm-hmm,
and yeah. I'll remember the O.J. Simpson Bronco chase because I was in my fifth grade class. Uh-huh. And I remember one of my classmates earlier that year did a presentation on O.J. Simpson and how awesome of a football player he was.
Oh,
and then
wow.
At the end of the year, we're sitting in the classroom, we wheel in a fucking big-ass TV
what?
And
that's
play
insane.
The fucking chase.
Like, children, you need to watch this. Everyone stop everything.
And we watched all the fucking chase. It was crazy.
Which is why you watch the show, and at first I'm like, why are we doing this? But this was an American Crime Story. This story mm-hmm. had all of American tuned in, glued into every aspect about this. And the thing that it really brought to light about this was the Mark Furman tape,
right.
The cop who was there, who he was this white cop. He found the evidence. He was on the crime scene and he lied on the stand. He said that he never used the N-word. And then the tapes reveal
where he's just like, N-word this, N-word
and
that.
Months later,
I'm racist.
Yeah, I'm racist. I believe in planting evidence so that these niggers get caught, like,
yeah.
Just everything. It was what black people knew all along, that cops were racist, especially down
right.
in LA, that there was a different set of
right.
rules for black folks, and in this case allowed for those tapes to be revealed, and the whole world had to see this. Even the president,
I know,
Bill Clinton, afterwards was forced to address and talk
yeah.
about the systemic racism within cops. And once you get to the end of the series, you're just like, I get it. Why this
right.
story needed to be told, especially in today's world and in today's culture and climate, and what better way than in
mm-hmm.
Ryan Murphy TV
I
drama form.
I just wish, though, like, after watching the documentary and watching the TV dramatization
yeah.
of it.
Heavy on the dramatization.
Yeah, because Cuba. Woo.
Ooh, Cuba. But he brought it to life. He brought that role to life. OJ is weird.
It's such a fascinating layered story, and I feel so torn about it because OJ, like, essentially disowned black people.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
Then
yes.
they basically, like, he straight up, like, during the Watts riots, which was this huge civil rights riot that happened in LA, he was going to USC, which is like a largely white affluent school, and being like totally like applauded as like the student athlete,
mm-hmm.
and he wouldn't say anything for civil rights.
Yeah.
He never fought for black people.
Nope.
And then turn around, Johnny Cochran was a smart lawyer, did
Very
all
smart.
Of this, saved OJ was essentially saved by the abuse of other black people, what they suffered.
You are absolutely right, because that's exactly one of the conversations that was around this, because being black has hurt
right.
black people for so long, they then took it and flipped
mm-hmm.
it and used it. Even though, you're right, he had distanced himself from the black community. He never gave.
He didn't give a fuck about us.
He never gave any money to black organizations or help young black youth.
Yeah.
All of his friends were rich, white, wealthy people hanging out at the golf course. And he couldn't even go back to all of his rich, white friends after that trial. Because it's just so interesting, because he had turned his back on the black community, and it's what being black, the black community saved him, and it's what being black is the thing that fucking saved
they
him.
They literally, like, at one point, they had to switch out all the pictures
yes,
in his house.
Because
all he had was just pictures
right.
of him and white people.
And
so they had to go in there and put, like, blackify his house.
Blackify his house. And I found myself, like, him being the vehicle for what I was rooting for.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, also, like, you know, he's married to this white woman, and Birth of a Nation way back in, like, 1915 or whatever had already painted the picture that, you know, black men were going to rape and kill all the white women. And had he been found guilty, LA would have been burnt to a cinder.
I know.
People would have lost their goddamn mind. The tension was already insane outside the courthouse.
Right.
And it was like so close right after the Rodney King riots. And and again, the Mark Furman tapes. And also interesting, the sexism of Marcia Clark and what she was going up against. Just a really compelling story that is just so relevant to today. And I get why Ryan Murphy wanted to talk about this. And the next one he's doing is going to be about Katrina.
Oh, that's going to be fascinating. I'm really into that.
And you know what his comment was?
What's that?
He was like, because Katrina was an American crime.
Oh, shit. I like that.
Go ahead, boy.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I can't argue with that. Can you do me a favor, though, James?
I will blindly say yes.
I want you to watch that documentary.
Oh. Yes, I want to.
But you can stop right before they get to the trial, because I feel like the trial is covered great in the TV show. The TV show, but the documentary gives some good lead up that you don't get in the TV show.
Like his dad was gay, and Ryan Murphy didn't know that till he saw the documentary after his show already premiered.
Right, and how in his time at USC, and how just both of those things, how they kind of shaped him into being who he was.
Interesting. I do want to watch that. It's just so weird that this thing for so long that when I was a kid, I just was like, this shit is just ruining my cartoon experience. I'm not into it. And everyone around me was just like, you know, he didn't do it. And that's what I went with as well. But it's so funny to revisit this with what I know now and to experience it now.
Yeah.
And whether or not he did it or not, like, it's better that, for me, it's like, whatever. Ignorance is bliss. It's not even about that for me.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
But it's about what this case represented on a larger level.
Right.
And I also appreciate that the show doesn't really say whether or not he did or he didn't. And I feel like it just really presents the facts.
Yeah, exactly.
And was there really a romance between Marcia Clark and
Chris Darden? They both have kind of alluded that there was something.
Ooh.
They both have been like, winkety, winkety, nudge, nudge.
Scandalous.
But we're not saying, which to me is a giant yes.
Yeah, but that's what the TV show kind of did. It was like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, getting close, just the tip. Because this was, I think, all based on, because everybody wrote books except for the judge, which also the plot twist with the judge and how his wife gets further involved into it. Like, you can't write this. Like, this is, it was like a soap opera. Like, that's why everyone's eyes were so glued to it. And this particular story was like a prequel to The Kardashians. Which is fitting because, like, OJ is where reality television as we know it really stemmed from and came from.
Oh, it was a prequel to The Kardashians. It's the only reason that they're relevant.
I did not know that.
Because of their dad.
I mean, I knew.
No, you didn't know that.
But I didn't know, like, the full details.
There's a rumor that Khloe Kardashian is actually OJ's.
Oh, well, now it all makes sense. Whoa. Ooh, Chris. Ooh, come on the show and talk about
it. I mean, they all like black men. Let's just be honest.
It's true. Selma, can we talk about some of the casting? Selma Blair as Kris Jenner was the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
They squeezed that in there. They shoehorned that in. They were like, get that Kardashian reference in there.
I have to say, I've never seen an episode of The Kardashians, but it made me want a spinoff between David Schwimmer as Rob Kardashian and Selma Blair as Kris Kardashian. Because
stop it. Like, they just
want their own show. I would not watch the actual, like, Kardashians, but I just want to watch the dramatization of the Kardashians.
I would, too. That's good. That's some good shit.
David Schwimmer and Selma Blair are so good. And Nathan Lane, so good. I'm so glad that you saw it. I really wanted to decompress and just sort of talk about it. So thank you.
No, I think that was good. And it brings up a good point in my corner.
Oh.
Because my corner is all about gross police brutality.
Ooh, well, shit. Let's put some gas in the Bronco and get on over to your corner and talk about it.
All right. Corner.
She's here. She's busting it up. Watch out, cops. She's busting it up. Huh.
It is, yes.
That's also part of your theme song.
I like that. That's good. Except I don't know about Watch Out, Cops.
Okay.
I'd like to.
That's not all you do. Watch out, people. She's busting it up.
There we go.
Because that way you don't want your show to get stale.
It's true.
Like, you got the books, you got the looks. You busting it up.
I got the books, I got the
you
looks.
You busting it up. People, watch out.
Busting
it. Because she's busting it up. All right.
I'm coming
she's
through.
She's coming through.
Okay, so I got a lot to
I'm
cover.
Coming through. Oh.
I'm going to try and squeeze
all
this
right,
in.
Let's do
okay?
it. Roll up my sleeves.
So I got this. So Corner Kid Ryan C has a direct line, has a Pope line to my phone.
He does. Put on your white hat. Although I don't know if they're wearing white hats these days.
And
but yes.
He sent me this article.
Oh.
And I was really swayed by it. It was written last year in Latina Magazine by Cindy Casares. And it is extremely relevant now because Trump is actually trying to spend $21 billion to build that border. So we need to know where some of this border fucking paranoia stems from.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm going to talk about this incident between 1915 and 1919. Texas, there was the murder of hundreds, I would say even thousands of Mexican Americans. By civilians and the Texas Rangers.
What? And you're saying, and these are Mexican Americans. Like, I'm not saying yeah. it'd be okay if they were just Mexicans, but right. they were fucking
Americans. Yes.
Murdered by Texas yes. Rangers. Just making yes. sure that I got that.
Okay,
wow.
So how did this start? So in the first decade of the 20th century, large numbers of white American farmers from the Midwest began to make their way to South Texas. Okay. So South Texas, there is a remote region that had remained an enclave to Mexican Americans. So it was basically this little area where Mexican Americans were living, and it was chill, peaceful. The Mexican families who became American citizens in the late 1800s at the end of the Mexican-American War.
Okay.
So the people living there were of Mexican heritage, but they were American citizens because they became citizens at the end of the Mexican-American War. I just wanted to clarify that.
That's like Eva Longoria said. She's like, you know, the border, we didn't cross the border crossed over us.
Yes.
Like her family was a part of that.
Exactly. So we're talking about the Longorias right now.
Yes, so specifically them.
Who survived, thank God.
Thank God, yes.
Okay, so after the war, new infrastructure started popping up because we're like, this is America now, so we're going to build roads and railways. So because
right.
of that, okay. white people started being like, oh shit, new land, gonna come to it. So they started coming down to the area. And mm-hmm. like all gentrification, this is like early gentrification.
This is early hipsters.
Land prices started to go up.
Of course.
And then the increasing rates of many, Mexican-American ranchers, they weren't able to afford the rising property taxes. So, you know, like if land prices go up, taxes go up. So right. even if you own land on that area,
it doesn't matter if you can't afford.
If things are going up in price, your taxes are going up yeah. in price, which therefore displaces you.
Which hella sucks because you're like, I was already living here when this was Mexico,
yes.
and then it became America, and then y'all came over here because it was really cool.
And now I'm displaced.
And now I can't afford to live
exactly.
here. That is bullshit. Early gentrification.
But even worse than regular, like now gentrification.
Yeah.
White farmers, yeah. They were some shady asses, and they started to strip land from Mexican Americans. Mm. They were laying claim to it. So laying claim, they would be like, oh, you can't afford that. Let me take that for you. Let me buy you out. Or they would just steal it.
Shady farmers. Shady ass farmers. Like, so, what, they just put, like, a flag down and they're like,
yes.
you don't have a flag, like, in the words of Eddie Izzard.
Yeah, so title changes and theft basically led to 187,000 acres of Mexican-American land being taken away from them. So this is the climate.
Okay.
And this was between 1900 to 1910. So 10 years slowly of 187,000 acres moving from Mexican-American hands into new white farmer hands
right.
in shady ways, being priced out, being moved out, being stolen.
As if they're just like
changing
entitled
titles.
To this. Yeah.
And this was in the lower Rio Grande area.
Awful.
Okay, so while that's going on in America, across the border, in Mexico, they were in the middle of a revolution, okay? So working class peasants fought to overturn the corrupt old orders of Mexico.
Okay.
They were, in turn, the old order was robbing them of their land. So these Mexican peasants were basically, like, getting booted from their land as well.
Ah, like,
and so they were being pushed into America from Mexico.
Right.
And many of them found themselves in South Texas. So these Mexican peasants, who were basically Mexican revolutionaries, were in now Texas, and they were like, fuck this shit. This is happening here too. God damn it.
It's like everywhere
they
turn.
So they were like, we need help from Mexican Americans, African Americans, Native Americans, and Japanese Americans.
Rally up.
We are going to start a cultural uprising.
Wow.
And they formed together to, so they kind of formed a small group that wanted to overthrow white elites with a cultural revolution that had displaced all of them.
That is amazing. What was the year? Can I ask?
This is around 1915.
Listen up. This ain't nothing new we're experiencing, folks. You know what? Mm-hmm. This is the shit that gets left out of history books because they don't want you to remember this. That we...
Exactly!
We've been fighting for all this equality shit beforehand. Early 1900s.
Hello?
This is a huge part of our history.
This is mirroring exactly what's happening right now!
See?
Okay.
Who writes them history books?
So, January 24th, 1915, the U.S. government finds out about this cultural uprising through a document called the Plan de San Diego.
Uh-oh.
Okay?
Right.
So, the U.S. government is like, oh, shit, there's going to be a cultural uprising. What do we need to do? Mm-hmm. Well, first, we got to secure this motherfucking border.
Uh-huh.
So, they go to secure the border. They don't have a lot of technology in 1915. So, they're like, we need boots on the ground. And they get the U.S. Cavalry to go down there, and the Texas Rangers. So Texas increased the number of their Rangers in the force from 73 to 130.
Whoa.
In just a matter of months. So by doing that, of course, all these new Rangers are not trained properly.
I was going to say, I doubt how thorough was that training in just that amount of months. They just have like guns and a badge.
Yeah.
Who probably are like, you know, fuck the Mexicans, have like a vendetta, like passed down from,
right,
because they're trying to get this land which they think is theirs.
Exactly. So
but nobody
remembers
history.
Are set out, so basically the cultural uprising that this Plan de San Diego had outlined that the U.S. government got,
mm-hmm,
never actually happened. There were a few Mexican insurgent raids that did happen that resulted in 21 American deaths. So this was the spark.
Okay.
But including in the 21 deaths were many Mexican Americans. So it's a mess, all
right? Yeah.
Okay, so the Texas Rangers were like, we need to fucking retaliate.
Fuck you,
Walker. And remember, these Texas Rangers are not trained.
Oh, right. Yes. They're not trained. They just got a gun and a badge and they're like, I'm ready to go.
Yes, and they were ordered basically to protect the border, to make sure no Mexicans came in, and to, you know, stop Mexican revolutionaries. Well, these Texas Rangers were racist, and they didn't give a fuck if you're a Mexican or Mexican-American.
Of course, right.
Okay? Because of that, many Americans agreed, or many historians agreed, that at least 300 people were killed, but it's probably more like 5,000 Mexican Americans were murdered and killed during this time period.
My God. This atrocity. Because if they were just to see someone that was brown skin, not even tried to, like, detain, it was just, like, shoot to kill. And, like, why?
They would, so basically what they did during this time, they would kill women, children, young people, old people, neighbors, strangers, would just capture anybody who looked Mexican. They would humiliate and torture them. They would leave these bodies just out to rot. They would burn the bodies. It was horrendous. It got to a point where people in the history, like, writings have said that, like, the dead Mexican bodies on the street were just, like, whatever.
This is barbaric. The fact that this took place in, like, the last, like, century, you're not talking about, like, 4000 BC or even, like...
No! Like, this is fucking 1915. 1915 to 1919, this was happening. 4 fucking years.
The Titanic had, like, set sail. Had set sail and sank exactly. around now. This is modern-ish times.
This is, like, a great-grandparents' history.
It's just ridiculous. Like, yeah, someone's grandparents is all up involved in this. And also just, like, on one end, fighting World War I on one side and then doing this shit in our own fucking country.
Exactly. Exactly. So, okay. While this was happening, we do have to give credit to some of the white Texans that tried to help.
Thank you, white Texans.
This one guy's name was Thomas Hook. He was an attorney in Kingsville. Thank you, and Thomas. He helped a group of Mexican Americans send a telegram to President Racist Woodrow Wilson for a federal investigation and protection of their rights.
Good.
Unfortunately, Hook was pistol whipped by the Texas Ranger captain, J.J. Sanders.
Are you fucking kidding me? A fucking pistol whip?
Right.
Like, what? Really? That's not even you doing your job. That's just you being a dick. That's just you being an asshole. A totalitarian military asshole.
Exactly. Like, what the fuck? And this was allowed to happen? So, how did this end?
Yes. Okay. Like, what is the resolution here?
Ugh. So, State Representative Jose Tomas Canales, who was the only Mexican-American in the Texas legislature in 1990, and the only way that he got that was because it was a holdout from before the ranchers came and displaced all of these Mexican-American families. So basically, him being in Texas legislature was like a reminder of, wait a minute, y'all stole our land like hella recently because I was voted into this position.
We were already here.
He filed 19 charges against Texas Rangers and demanded a legislative investigation and reorganizing of the force. Mm. And then, believe it or not, the fucking legislation, they complied.
Oh, wow. Plot twist. Yeah.
So they were able to come to a conclusion through witness testimonies, and the Ranger force was slashed in half. Oh, so they were like, get these motherfuckers out of here. Yeah. And they got rid of this, like, they called them the Texas Legacy Rangers, and those were the ones that were tasked to fucking hunt down the Mexicans.
That sounds hella racist.
I know.
When you say that phrase, like, a shiver went down
fucking
my
legacy?
Spine. Like, it sounds hella racist. Sounds like the Brotherhood of Races with guns. The Ku Klux Cousins with guns.
So they got rid of that. Thank
Good.
God.
Bye.
And then
out of
finally,
my face.
The fucking terror subsided. But can you imagine growing up in that environment and how that could color things? Like, no wonder people are racist. No wonder there's that fear there. Because this was planted in there by people being fucking land getting stolen, people getting upset right. about it, and then it explodes into the death of 5,000 people just dead
right.
on
well,
the street.
It doesn't make any sense to me because, like, I can't wrap my head around, at least in some way today, there's a little bit more, it's like less cowboying. People are at least, like, detained, I guess. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but then it was just like, if you see them, just shoot them. Whereas today,
right, like we're not going to, I hope to hell not, and I don't know what to expect, but no one is going, I hope no one would lynch anybody now. You know what I mean? Like,
right. But it's like, these are stories that I think that I'm so glad that you brought all this stuff up, because it's stories that we don't hear about. The only history that we hear about is a bunch of white people, and then we hear about right. Martin Luther King and some civil rights
and Rosa
stuff.
Rosa Parks.
Call it yeah. a day. That's it. And then a lot of white history. Latino history, this is a part of American history. This is a part of
that's American
what
history.
Makes up America, the good, the bad, and the ugly of our history. And so it's so frustrating that it's like, I'm 31 years old, and it's the first time I'm hearing about any of this.
Right. And like,
and
the fact
purposeful.
That there's TV shows that are like so excited about Texas Rangers and how wonderful Texas Rangers are, and like, I don't want to celebrate Texas Rangers now. Like, they have a complicated, crazy Ooh. Past that they hid from us.
Now, I know you're not going against Chuck Norris, because he will come after you, Aneke. He will karate chop you.
Handle
That's
Chuck Norris.
One Texas Ranger I'm not going to fuck with. That's I don't fuck with Chuck Norris.
Oh, my God. That Texas Ranger, I don't know. Okay, I won't come for Chuck Norris because I don't trust him.
I'm just kidding. You know what? Come for me, Chuck Norris. Come for me. I got you. Got you, got you, got you, pal, Chuck Norris. You know, I'm on the fence.
I think he's conservative.
I just don't know where he's coming from. I don't know his politics. Tweet at us. Let us know, Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris, let us know. Because I don't understand what that show is about.
It makes no sense.
Like,
I don't understand Texas Rangers. Are they police? Like, what is going on?
What was that show? That's why, like, you know, I'm questioning him because he did sign up for a show called Walker Texas Ranger where he
I never watched Walker Texas Ranger. That was not on my list.
And it's just like, it's literally just like white male fantasy because it's like cowboys and karate and them going around finding the bad guys. I don't even know what that show was about. Was it about immigrants? Was it him kicking immigrants? I can't. This, you know what? This also reminds me about what I learned about in college. And right after World War II, and maybe we'll dive deeper into this into another episode, but back in World War II in the U.S. government created a deal between the U.S. and Mexico that Mexico was going to send over workers to work on our farms.
Cheap labor.
Yes. And it was like a deal that was only supposed to last for like at least a decade or so. I don't remember the full details.
Oh, fascinating.
So then what it did is it created a dependency.
I need to look into this. I need to look into
America for this. Again, cheap labor.
Yeah.
Right? And also it made the Mexican economy dependent upon this income coming in from the U.S. and these workers. And they had like shitty housing accommodations and these farmers. Learned about it in college. So again, we've created this situation.
We started this shit.
The U.S. has created this situation. So it's really, incredibly frustrating.
I just wish, and the reason that I bring this up, and I'm still proud to be an American, and I'm an American, and we live here, this is our country, but I think, just like how I always say we gotta side-eye everything, we gotta side-eye our own country, and we need to accept that we have a very checkered path. Like,
yes, we do.
Like, shit is not good. Like, America is not always the beautiful. That, like, we are damn nasty, ugly sometimes.
A lot of
and
times.
If we acknowledge it, we can move on from it and we can stop repeating this shit.
Yeah.
Like, if we learned this in class, maybe somebody right now who is totally about building the wall would be like,
hold up. Oh, that's how this comes to? Ooh, oh, that border crossed over these people and then these people were like slaughtered and killed. Oh, for being there. Got it. Okay. Hey, Dad, guess what? Let's not build the wall. I just learned about this in school. It's actually really fucked up. We already tried this before, and it was really fucked up.
Right.
And you know what? Fuck farmers. Like, some of y'all are good, but I am just, I'm not feeling it. I'm not.
I can't say that. I like farmers. I like to eat produce.
But you know what?
I like to eat produce.
We give farmers just way too much. Way too much. We switch our clocks for them, Aneke. There's no reason to do that anymore. Because, you know, you can set your fucking alarm and you would be fine, Farmer Joe, Farmer Brown. Set your damn clock.
I am not signing on to your petition for hate against farmers.
And some of these California farmers.
Well, those farmers came over after World War II, gave
them shitty housing and paid them like nothing.
That's true. That's so bootsy as hell. That's bullshit.
Shady ass, bootsy ass farmers. And also, I just found out recently from the Samantha Bee show that, like, that they're trying to go after all these us sanctuary cities to try to like cut our funding. But there's something like 85% of the country's economy comes from these sanctuary cities.
Really?
So we like subsidize.
We're giving y'all money.
So you all need to calm it down, farmers.
Calm down, take our money. Let us be a sanctuary and stop being racist.
Because if it wasn't for all these people coming over here to these sanctuary cities and making this money and stimulating our economy, we wouldn't have money to give to you all. Farmer Joe, Farmer
Let's
Brown.
Let's try and not be so afraid of everything, too. That is like some bullshit that I need to.
Goes back to step one. Go to therapy. Farmers.
Yes.
You know what? This is what I support. I support this movement. Okay. My tax dollar is going to funding therapy for farmers.
That's not, you know what? Farmer Joe needs someone to talk to. It's lonely out there.
Which apparently, because he's lonely and all he has to do is talk to his corn, which there's too much of. So stop making the goddamn corn, Farmer Brown.
I did not know.
It's too much of it. You were ruining the environment.
Energy towards.
I have venom for farmers. Just say it. I have venom. I have venom for farmers. I am not afraid. I am not a fan. Not a fan of your past. Not a fan of your work.
We let them do what they want. I like food.
Farmers and Wall Street. That's what it comes down to. Farmers and Wall Street.
And just we're gonna
pick of the world.
I think
pick of their country.
That's a good place to end.
I'm watching you, Farmer Joe. and Farmer Brown, this city boy has eyes on you.
It's James Corner. I get to relax and just listen to some facts.
You better listen up, girl. Because I am talking about Brother Outsider.
Okay.
I'm giving some much needed love and attention to Bayard Rustin.
I'm into it.
So I was inspired with last week's episode where we talked about the Pomo Afro Homos.
Yes.
And one of the Pomo Afro Homos, Brian Freeman, he wrote this play called Civil Sex, which was about Bayard Rustin. It premiered at the Berkeley Repertory Theater.
East Bay!
Not to be confused with the Black Berkley Repertory Theater. That's a different
just
theater.
Just the Berkeley Repertory Theater.
We'll just... Different theater. We won't go into details about that theater. It needs some help, but okay.
Just leave it. Let it lie.
That's enough feuds for one day. Already had the Farmers, but I'm not going to feud with the Berkeley Black Repertory Theater.
This is a James feud.
You know what? I'm going to be starring in Ryan Murphy's new show called Feud.
It's just going to be you and a bunch of farmers. And Jennifer Hudson.
And the West End.
The West
End. The list goes on. Omarosa and Stacey Dash.
Come on.
Yeah,
everybody,
that's true.
Omarosa and Stacey Dash are low-hanging fruit.
Well, I got episode one.
Ramp up.
It's
you
got
to get people on board when you go after the farmers.
Yeah, so episode one will be Stacey Dash and Omarosa. And then I'm going to build up. Got to build up.
Because that's going to be James versus the Heartland. That's hard.
It's going to be a jump. I'm going to jump the shark.
Okay.
They'll come around. I'm going to drop them facts. All right. So, forgotten hero and activist, practitioner.
Yeah, right.
Voice of an angel. He had a beautiful voice, a singing voice. He was an amazing community organizer. And what a lot of people don't know is that he was the man that organized the Million Man March back in 1963.
Damn.
And he was out and proud. Gay Black activist.
And can we point about this is 1963?
Yes. And so this man was like born in like 1912.
And this is before.
And was
he was born in 1912, right when like all this shit was going down.
Yes,
in
I know.
In Texas. And so look at the cross lines of our timelines.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that people have been fighting for so long. And that's what should inspire us. People have been fighting forever. Especially since like the 1900s.
Yes.
Or once slavery ended, people have been fighting. People be fighting for equality and for rights.
Keep fighting.
Yeah. So this man was silenced, threatened, beaten, and arrested because he was both Black and gay.
Mm.
So he was born in Westchester, Pennsylvania on March 17, 1912. Birthday coming up, y'all.
Oh.
And it was a pretty white town. It also had some segregation, which I did not realize was up in the North as well.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There was a colored entrance for the theater, and young Bayard was like, ah, I'm not going to go sit up in that theater, up in that balcony.
Right, he's like, what the
fuck? He was like 19, as a young teen. So he sat in the regular section, already sparking the revolution.
Oh shit, Rosa Parks in it already.
Oh, right? Funny you should mention that, because he is the prequel for Rosa Parks, you'll see.
I'm ready.
So he was born and raised a Quaker, which would come into play into his philosophies, because Quakers were all about nonviolence. They were early adopters of slavery abolition.
Right.
I love their oatmeal. Quakers are dope.
I once sent, in the fifth grade, during OJ times, I sent a letter to the Quaker Oats asking them if it was a Quaker. And they wrote me back a long response with free oatmeal, too.
See? I'm about that Quaker life. The Quakers, I'm about y'all. I see what you're doing, and I'm into it. So also there's this, you know, fun fact. Well, you can get a lot of this information. There's a documentary that came out called Brother Outsider, early 2000s, because that's what this man was. And he played football when he was in high school.
Oh, shit.
And he was dope as fuck. He was just a talented man. Bayard is just talented as fuck.
He was a star.
He would, like, tackle someone and recite some poetry to him because he was also, like, a literary, too. And he was a left tackle, which that's what I was when I played football. So a lot of similarities. And it's interesting because at school, everyone was really cool with each other and they could play sports with each other. But outside in the outside world where the racism would seep in and they couldn't hang out together.
No.
So highly recommend everybody watch the documentary, because we know so much about Martin Luther King, but this other man that we owe so much to. Mm. But this...
And his brother Outsider.
Yeah, it's called Brother Outsider.
Okay.
It was viewed on PBS, but it wasn't... Mm. PBS didn't make it. They just had the rights to it. I think they played it like last year, but you can find it online. It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, perfect.
But this is not in the documentary, but I just found this out that thought that Julia and Jennifer were his parents, but it turned out they were his grandparents. Plot twist.
Oh, shit.
Florence, who he thought was his aunt, was actually his sister.
Oh, shit. What happened to, who is his mom then?
I'm sorry. Wait, no. Florence was his mom. He thought it was his sister.
Oh. Whoops.
I got that family tree wrong. Listen, I'm not a biologist, botanist, familyologist.
You're not a genealogist. There you go.
I am definitely not a genie.
You're not a botanist either.
I am
He's not a
genie.
Plant.
gotta get a friend like me. Ha! Three wishes.
Maybe you are a genie, because that came pretty naturally from you.
I'm a genie in a bottle. You gotta rub me the right way.
See, you're just proving the case that you are a genie. You're just quoting all of these genie lyrics.
And I just want my freedom. Wish me free.
See, stop it. You just can't help yourself.
So what I love about this is that, remember, this is like 1920 or something, right?
Which is crazy.
He came out to his grandmother and she just was like, I guess that's just how it is for you. That's it.
What? In 1920?
It was like 1920. Yeah. 1920s, roaring 20s. So he never had any shame or guilt.
Yes.
He just was always just like, you know what? This is me. Never felt the need to hide
Good.
It.
Good. And that is some privilege, though. Can we acknowledge that? That he was in a really fortunate family and
Yeah, absolutely. And it gave us the gift of all these other things that he would turn out to do. So
exactly.
He went to Wilbur University in Ohio, and then he went to a few different universities, and then State Teachers College, which is now the University of Penn, Pennsylvania. Both of those were historically black schools.
Cool.
He was kicked out for organizing.
Oh.
So he was like, this food is shitty.
Uh-oh.
And he staged some organizing and some protests in college. He was ready to go. This is not right. Let's stand up for our rights.
He's already protesting shit.
Yes. So he was kicked out of school for doing that. And then he moved to NYC because like, shit, nothing going on here. And then he moved to Harlem in about 1930, which is where I live now. And he had this beautiful singing voice.
Oh.
And you can actually find some recordings of him online.
What can't he do?
I know, exactly. He is just, he is like the real OJ. I mean, like, he didn't do anything creepy or anything, or is it weird, or possibly for murder or something. Or a violent person. He's the opposite of having any violent tendencies, but he just is so talented and this great person to look up to. So he sang in clubs to earn money, and he actually appeared with Paul Robeson in a Broadway musical, John Henry.
Paul Robeson just be popping up everywhere. That
it's
man
true.
Was like yes. the most famous.
But see, Baird had a lot of outrage against the racism that was happening, so he wanted to do something that was more into organizing.
Yeah.
He wanted to use his talents that were going to help more in a stronger active stance. So he joined the Young Communist League because...
getting involved with the communists?
Because he was like, for him, the Liberal Party wasn't being liberal enough and wasn't caring about black folks, and the Communist Party that time was...
A lot of black people joined the Communist Party, including, that's probably who he was, Paul Robeson.
Oh, was... probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because Paul was like, hey, communism,
check
this
shit out.
Yeah. But eventually, as World War II was coming up, the Communist Party... was talking less about race. So he was like, I can't be a part of this. Fuck this mess. Y'all don't get it anymore.
Yeah.
So he was really tackling economics, like similar to like what Bernie Sanders was talking about.
Mm.
If you approach it from an economic standpoint, you can really start to create equality for everyone, because the way the system is set up, it really tries to pit minorities against poorer whites, lower working class whites.
Right. Instead of all of us coming together.
Exactly. And uniting against the richy rich folks.
Right.
And his philosophy came out of his Quaker religion and background, played a huge impression onto where his ideas came from. because he's the one, I'll explain this later, he's the one that taught Martin Luther King nonviolent resistance.
He's the one that taught him that?
Yes.
What?
I know. So he was also influenced by Mahatma Gandhi.
Yes.
And one of his mentors was A. Philip Randolph, who was one of the labor leaders, one of the first black labor leaders, A. Philip Randolph. He also ended up spending some time in Africa and in India.
Damn, he traveled with other, too?
Yes.
This guy is amazing.
I know. He actually shut down the French government. I'll get to that a little bit later.
What?
Yeah. He's just doing it up.
Oh, my God.
So he was meeting with these other peace organizations, and he went to India, and this was right after Gandhi had been assassinated, but he studied with Gandhi's students, so he was able to learn all of this nonviolent resistance training from essentially, you know, one of the leading practitioners,
yeah,
one of the best.
The source.
Like the source, yeah. And essentially getting this idea that your body is power. It has the power to shut shit down.
Oh, I'm into this so much.
And so he worked closely with A. Philip Randolph, who started the first black labor union. Randolph started the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters.
Yes!
Yes. Randolph started that. So Randolph was like a mentor to him. And they worked together to also end discrimination in the military leading up to World War II and that time. One of his other mentors was A.J. Must, who was a minister, pacifist, slash activist, was really prevalent in like the labor movements and organizing. And he really liked Bayard and saw Bayard as this great talent because Bayard was this great speaker and people really listened to him when he talked. He was so passionate and charismatic. But Must was not a big fan of Bayard being gay, so much that when Bayard had this boyfriend, Must would try to break them up. He would go to each of them separately.
What the fuck? That's some catty shit.
No, right? Scandalous. So he would always try to come in between them and try to break them up. But through Must, Bayard learned about Gandhi, actually, from him. A.J. Must, he was the leader of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, and then they started the American Service Committee, and he was sort of the, Bayard was the leader of that. And these were mostly white groups, but they allowed him to get experience speaking, to build an audience. He created like a newsletter through this experience and just essentially like created this network of people. He was also able to get a title from this, build an audience for himself, and creating a name for himself and getting people to listen to him.
And what time period was this?
So this is before World War II and also into World War II as well.
So 40s.
So this is like way before what we know as civil rights movement. Bayard was out there before.
This is like
King.
20 years prior.
Yes.
Almost.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
And when World War II hit, he was like, hold up, I'm a Quaker and a pacifist. I can't do this. He was not about being drafted. He's like, I can't kill people. So there was another service he could do without having to go over to fight, but he was just like, fuck this, I'm not doing it. He said, I'm a Quaker, and as everyone knows, Quakers for 300 years have on conscious ground been against participating in war. And then he was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison.
Damn, did he serve it?
Yes, he did. And he said that when he did it, it was sort of because he was like a political prisoner at this point, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was empowering for him. So he was able to really just fill out the service because he was like, I believe in why I'm here. And he was sort of empowered by that. And it strengthened him. So he went to jail.
Why don't we have a movie or a TV show about this guy? Because already we haven't even gotten to the civil rights movement. And he's lived like 12 lives.
I know. He's so fascinating and so rich of information. And he's done so much work. We're benefiting from so much of the work that he's done. And I'm only in the 1940s. You know, Martin Luther King wasn't even born yet.
Yeah, because Martin Luther King was hella young. He was 36. So he was like he was a little kid at this point.
When Bayard meets him in the 50s, King was like 25 at that time. So Bayard was like a mentor to King.
Okay.
So he actually had a lot of different run-ins with the police. In 1947, he had a new group called the Journey of Reconciliation, which came out of the Freedom of Reconciliation.
Okay.
This Journey group were a interracial group and was about nonviolent pacifist demonstrations. And while they were touring, Bayard refused to sit in the back of the bus. Does that sound familiar to you?
Oh, shit. That sounds hella familiar. Right.
He refused to sit in the back of the bus, and the police show up, and it was like this huge deal. And this is down in the South.
Yeah.
And he said that he said this is what he said. He said, "I refuse to do it because there's a small white child sitting right there." And he said, "If I go to the back, that child would think that this was normal. And I need child to see that this is not okay."
Yes.
Right?
This is like man, who?
1947.
This is crazy. Boy,
and the bus boycotts didn't happen until like 1955. So because of this, he was forced to work in a chain gang for like 7 weeks. And an intelligent ass Bayard was like, "This is fucked up. I do not feel human. This is awful. And the world must know." Yeah. Remember, he had that news article and that news, that newsletter. So yes. He goes back to New York, and it got published in the national news and essentially brought about the end of the North Carolina chain gang by bringing this to national awareness. Because he wrote an expose and he exposed that shit.
I feel like just every once in a while in our lifetimes, we get these amazing people, and it's such a shame that I don't know anything about him.
Right, yeah. I mean, this man, so it's so funny because when you think about Black History Month,
right,
he is so much about our history. This is an amazing man.
Right.
And he had a voice of an angel.
Just to add on top of it. Right. Just a little sprinkle on top.
Star athlete. But then in 1953, he was out on the road with his group, you know, whatever coalition at the time he was with. He's been in so many.
Yeah.
Preaching his message of love. This is 1953. He was arrested in Pasadena, California for moral charges. Like, fuck that. I mean, the fact that we used to even have these moral charges and moral laws.
I know. Like, what the fuck? Get the fuck out of here with your fucking moral police shit.
And these moral laws, I feel like they still have... There's still remnants of them that are still affecting our laws today.
Oh, yeah?
You know. So, essentially, he was getting it on in the back seat with two white dudes.
Damn, threesome?
So he got arrested. Yes. Back in 1953. Remember, like, he didn't care. He did not care.
But also, not to, like, trivialize, but that sounds uncomfortable. Three people in the back of a car?
Right.
That's a lot of just, like, fumbling.
I'm not sure if they had, like, you know, maybe, like, sedans or station wagon type things back then.
Oh, if it was, like, a big-ass car? It was the 50s. They had big-ass cars back then.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. It was, like, those cars back then were, like, big-ass boats, you know? So...
See, this needs to be a movie. That is some sexy shit.
Right? Yeah, and it's sexy, too. He got arrested. So, you know who was really upset about that? AJ Must. He was
who's
like
been trying to like break him up from his boyfriends and
yes.
shit.
So we fired him from this. So he was out of the Freedom Reconciliation Coalition, whatever. But Randolph to the rescue was like, "Hey, I got a job for you.
Yes!
I got this War Resisters League that I'm starting up." And so Bayard worked there for the next 12 years.
Oh, damn, 12.
So now let's get to King.
Okay.
So now we're getting to the point where him and Martin Luther King meet. So he's been through all of that.
Which is a lot. That's a lifetime.
He's been through all of that. He's well been up in the movement. He's definitely like the older guy, older man.
Let's also say like he's been around the world. He's been to jail.
Yeah.
He's been on a
jail.
Fucking chain gang and then ended chain
right?
gangs. He's been fucking.
He was in a gangbang.
Like, he fucking lived a life.
He's been shutting shit down. He was kind of like a mentor to King. They met in the 1950s.
Mm.
And he became like a chief strategist for King and sort of like a right-hand man for a while. Because like I said, he taught King about Gandhi's philosophy about nonviolent resistance and advised him on tactics of civil disobedience. So much in fact that when he first met King back in like the 50s, King had armed guards.
Oh, shit.
At his house. And so Bayard was like, I have some notes. I have some ideas. I have some things that are going to be helpful. And there's actually, apparently, on the documentary, they showed this clip from this movie called Boycott.
Mm.
And it has Bayard featured heavily in it. And it's got, who's that guy who played Beatty in The Hunger Games?
Oh, he's also in Westworld.
Yes. Okay, yes.
Jeffrey Wright.
So he plays Martin Luther King in this movie called Boycott.
Okay.
And so Bayard's actually in this movie. And that's another thing is that, like, a lot of Bayard's stories are not told. When they talk about Martin Luther King, he's not there. And, like, how can you talk about Martin Luther King and not
exactly,
talk
which
about,
is so, oh, God.
You know, Bayard. So he was one of the main organizers for the March on Jobs and Freedoms, also known as the Million Man March, which apparently I was watching a clip from it. They were announcing at the speech, they were like, we have 200,000 people here. So apparently there was not like a million.
It always, it has a good ring.
So
it's better than like a lot of people march.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta have goals. So, and this was the largest demonstration, the largest peaceful demonstration in history at the time.
Fuck yeah.
And also Randolph was the one that recommended Rustin be in charge. Cause he was like, Rustin can do it. Rustin had this, like, you know, resume and experience that he was the person to be one of the lead organizers. And also, a little sidebar, Kennedy was like, hey, y'all, don't do this march. Because Kennedy was the one that, I guess, had proposed the Civil Rights Act, and it was held up in Congress. And he was like, listen, if y'all do this march, it's going to undermine my authority. It's not going to look good for me. And Rustin was like, fuck this, we're doing it.
Good, and I'm glad that they did it. Because I know, I've heard in history that JFK was kind of wishy-washy, but Robert Kennedy, his brother, was way more into the civil rights movement and actually, like, was the one who brought the issue to JFK and was like, this is important. Yeah,
I would vouch for that, too. It's such a shame, all the assassinations that happened, but I think we'd be so much further along.
We would.
If Bobby Kennedy had not been assassinated, because he was really about civil rights.
It's so true.
So fucking Strom Thurmond.
Gross.
Publicly attacked Rustin on the Senate floor, which is bullshit because it's not like Rustin was a senator. So he publicly attacked Rustin on the Senate floor. He outed Rustin for being a homosexual.
Oh my God. Low and dirty. That has nothing to do with this.
And the Pasadena incident. And he probably got that information from the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover. They had probably been keeping a file on him since he was part of the Communist Party back in the 1930s and doing all the activist stuff that he was doing.
Oh, you know they were. J. Edgar Hoover did not fuck around.
So he was like on the FBI's list, and the FBI had this huge sort of file on him. And yeah, Hoover was probably the one that like handled the file over to Thurmond and was like, hey, look at the right-hand man of, you know, King, who's organizing this huge thing. So not only Thurmond, but some reporters as well were going to say that King and Bayard were having like a gay love affair.
Oh my God.
All kinds of just crazy stuff. So King was really pressured to keep a distance from Bayard.
What?
Because of Bayard being a homosexual, being the Pasadena incident, and his connection to being a communist.
God damn it.
A lot of times they had to then communicate through like memos and letters, and Bayard would write little chapters in his book for King. I guess just being like, this chapter's for you. And so Bayard organized this whole entire thing, this huge freedom march. Thank you, Bayard.
Thank you. Shit.
Right? And he helped coach King on all the bus boycotts.
So he literally founded all the guiding principles that Martin Luther King used.
Yes. Because he was like, listen, I know how to do this bus boycott. I did it back in North Carolina a few decades ago. Here's my notes. Here's how it's going to work. Here's how you do it. He
exactly.
knew. And when it was found to be unlawful, the segregation of buses being unlawful, he helped start the Southern Leadership Conference. Because at this point, they had so many different black organizations. The NAACP, there just was a bunch of different ones that were all fighting for, you know, black rights. But he was like, we need one unified sort of league and group so that they could all come together.
Oh.
So he helped start that. And which that's where King was the first president of the Southern Leadership Conference, which helped get King further on the national stage and like as one of the main leaders, because Bayard saw that this wasn't just a local win, the finding of the segregation of buses as unlawful. He was like, let's bring it to the national stage and national attention.
Right. Which is so important. That's the truth right there. He is literally the spirit of the civil rights movement.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, he is. Black gay man. And no one talks about him.
And this is so frustrating to me that a lot of,
It's because...
I don't know. I wish we heard more about him.
But it's because he's gay. It was because he was gay. And even after Dr. King was assassinated, people would still get his advice, but it would be from behind closed doors. They still kept distance. No one wanted to be that connected to him.
Which is so fucked up!
And he would go head-to-head with other Black leaders in debates like Malcolm X. And Byard didn't think that there needed to be two different Americas. He believed that we're all a part of the same human race.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end, Malcolm X wanted, you know, Black folks to have their own world and area, and groups wanted complete separation. They wanted their own country,
separatist movement. Exactly, like Marcus Garvey.
Yes, exactly, folks like him. And he was even criticized, like, by people like Amir Baraka, who we talked about last week. He pretty much, like, was like, you know, you got that white man disease. And I'm like, you know what, brother, please, did you organize this march?
Right.
What did you do?
Nothing, like, just critiquing and being a fucking hater.
That's it, yeah. So his later years, he was older than King, you know. And I think sometimes when you get older, your approach to things kind of changes and shifts. He then wanted, after the march... He never really did quite as anything quite as large because he was switching it up afterwards. He wrote this controversial piece called From Protest to Politics because he was arguing that the movement needed to move from the political stage, focusing its attention on electing liberals and less on protests.
Ooh, that's smart, man. Jesus.
But people were still wanting to take to the streets and not necessarily, and I get it, it's complicated. It's a broken system, and you still have, you know, voting right laws that are still affecting Black folks and X, Y, and Z and a lot of bullshit. But he was like, we've got momentum. We need to start voting in liberal people who are about what we're about and putting, essentially getting a seat at the table, right?
Right, and that's exactly how I feel, but I just know that it's not as sexy as going out and protesting. It's not as, like, you feel like you're actually doing something.
Yeah.
You know? It's the boring pencil pusher part of civil rights that needs to get done that he was now starting to dictate
because
for people to do.
Because I think he had seen an opportunity at this point to continue developing the momentum that was occurring.
Yes.
And plus, you know, like I said earlier, you get older and your paradigm shifts and your approach to things shift and, you know, your feet get tired. You don't want to march all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw Johnson, LBJ, as an ally because originally he had these plans for, like, the Great Society and the War on Poverty, which went away with Vietnam. And Rustin was actually one of the first people to publicly call for troops to get pulled out of Vietnam, but he actually then started keeping silent about Vietnam because he didn't want to alienate Johnson because he saw Johnson as an ally. And one last thing I want to share, back in 1959, he is a worldwide shut it the fuck down.
Yeah.
So France wanted to build their own atomic bomb. Okay. So where do they want to test it?
Where?
In Algeria, you know, one of their little colonies that they have.
Jesus.
And so Byard, with a team of people, went down to Algeria and was like, fuck this.
Yes!
He went there to go shut it down and got the people of Algeria, rallied them to protest because they were like, why the fuck are you testing this shit here? Go test it.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
The testing still happened, but it brought worldwide attention for this to get shut down eventually so they would stop doing their
tests. This man, I swear to God, I would watch a fucking TV, and I'm not even saying movie, because there's too many goddamn things that have happened. He needs to be a show with multiple seasons, because there are so many different layers to this story that, one, I had never even heard of this man, which is disgraceful for me. And two, like, it is the quintessential story of intersectionality.
Yeah, right. I know, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He talked a lot. Later on, he started getting involved in LGBT rights. He died at 75 back in 1987.
Oh, so he was around for Stonewall and all of that.
Oh, hell yeah, because that was like 1969, 68. He died from a ruptured appendix in New York City.
Oh, shit.
Lived to be 75, but...
That's not even that old.
Yeah, I know, but at least, you know, older than some of the leaders that we had at the time.
That's true.
And he said back in the 80s, he was like, became a huge champion for LGBT struggles. And he had this partner they had for like 10 years. And he said, you know, the barometer for judging the character of people in regards to human rights is now those who consider themselves gay, homosexual, or lesbian. Mm. The judgment as to whether you can trust the future, the social development, depending on people, will be judged on where they come out on that question. So now the new marker for human rights is where LGBT people are in terms of equality.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. God, I wish that he was around today so I could pick, like, this is a time period that we need someone like him.
Oh, and Barack Obama awarded him the Medal of Freedom in 2013.
Oh.
Yeah, giving him some recognition.
Oh, good. Okay, good, Obama. And that's, like, in the middle of his term. So it wasn't like he was doing that to, like...
No, he actually meant it.
Give votes or something. Yeah.
One last quote I would like to read to end it off on. Byard said, "If we desire a society of peace, then we cannot achieve such a society through violence. Mm. If we desire a society without discrimination, then we must not discriminate against anyone in the process of building this society. Mm. If we desire a society that is democratic, then democracy must become a means as well as an end."
Oof.
So there you have it. Good. Wanted to give some much needed attention and love to Byard. This was one man, and it also shows the power that one person has, and that we all have the power to get out there and to get involved in whatever way is our talent and our skills that we have. And he never let anything get in the way from stopping him from being involved, to getting his voice out there. He didn't let being gay, being a Quaker, being Black, nothing to stop him. We all have our ways to get involved. And we said this before.
Yes.
You know, people have been fighting for this country for decades, for centuries. This is nothing new.
It's not new.
So...
it's the fight continues.
So now it's our turn. It's our turn to continue the fight, to continue the torch. And I wanted to just recognize this amazing man. There are, you know, documentaries out there, there's readings, he has books, there's music. And this is why, like, I kind of side-eyed Selma a little bit.
Shit.
He wasn't really in that movie. And maybe it's just because at that moment in time, he wasn't that involved with King and that close. So maybe I'll give it a pass for that.
But still, this is amazing, James. You like have really opened my eyes to a person that not only like affected my life now, but like I can't even imagine doing as much as he has done and did in his life. Like,
I can't either.
God damn it. You know,
that
is someone who definitely is, you can say, lived up to all of his potential. Like,
oh, right. Yeah, totally. So inspiring. Control. What a hero. Mm-hmm. So let that guy be your hero, not OJ Simpson.
No. Don't end it like that, James.
Oh, okay. Okay. You're right. Byard Rustin, a true American hero. Is that better?
Yes.
My name is Patrick.
My name is Parker.
Max Fun Con has been a huge inspiration in my life.
Now I have this network of friends that I've made that span literally across the entire globe, and they're some of my favorite people in the world.
I truly cannot believe the amount of wonderful and lasting friendships that have come out of this.
If you feel like you might not fit in, as long as you're a good person, you'll fit in because everyone there is good and amazing and kind and wonderful, and you should absolutely go. It will be the best decision of your life.
Make a ton of new friends like Parker and Patrick at Max FunCon. Tickets for Max FunCon and Max FunCon East are on sale now at maxfuncon.com.
We're at the end
of the show.
Hey, did we get any fun tweets?
Yeah, so we got a tweet that I really want to highlight that we retweeted. So apparently Jesse Thorne, who you guys may know from Jordan Jesse Go and Bullseye and basically the head of Maximum Fun, the network that we're on, he tweeted out, he was like, who would you like to see at Max FunCon West and Max FunCon East? And I want to give a shout out to Extra Dark Pretzels, which sounds delicious.
Yeah.
They tweeted Minority Corner at hashtag Max FunCon West and motherfucking East, baby. Ooh. Because you know why?
We represented both sides. We are bi. We are a bi podcast.
So like that tweet, support us. If you want to come see us, then start tweeting about us at Minority Corner with a K dot at, you know, Twitter.
You know where it is. You can find us. You smart. So we would love to go to Max FunCon. So if you're listening and you would like to see us there, power to the people. If we've learned anything from Bayard, power to the people. Hashtag it. If it's not on a hashtag, it's not real. So, or put in a theme song.
Yes.
And also, if you would like to do a Jumbotron, we've got Jumbotron messages. If you've got an event coming up that you're promoting, or you just want to say, hey, what's up to my baby boy? Happy birthday.
We'll say it, and we're going to do it good and pretty.
We're going to make it fun, interesting, sexy, maybe some special effects.
Check, 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 check. Boom, boom, boom. Maybe we'll make it into a song.
We'll make it into a jingle. That means it's real. We got you. And it's a great way to support the podcast, too. So you can go to maxfun.com/jumbotrons and you can sign up for a Jumbotron.
Do it! Ah! That was annoying, sorry.
That noise will not be in your Jumbotron. No. Unless you specifically request that, it's whatever you want.
Then we'll do that. We'll do that. James will even do it in his Jennifer Hudson voice.
Jumbotron, and I am telling you, happy birthday. I'm a Jumbotron. Yes. Okay.
That was good. Corner Kids. Oh, James. Yes. Corner Kid Playground.
Oh, yeah.
We have reached 100 people.
We reached 100. There's a lot more listeners, so maybe y'all don't have Facebook.
I'm excited. Look at you shaming people already when I'm trying to celebrate.
Sure, yes.
Celebrate the 100 members.
You can do better, Corner Kids. That's all I'm saying. Would Bayard settle for 100? No.
You are the disappointed mother of Minority Corner constantly.
I know we can do better. So
you're that.
Would Dina Lohan settle for 100?
Yes. We all know that.
She might. She probably would. She'd be like, woo, I'm going to go do a bunch of drugs.
You are dangerous minding us. You are the disappointed Ooh, teacher that knows that we are exactly not living it up to our Michelle potential.
I was going to say the Macaulay Culkin parent reference, but that just, okay, that's sad.
I don't even know what a Macaulay Culkin parent reference would be.
Yours is better. Okay. Would they settle? No.
No, they
just
wouldn't.
Take all the money.
Yeah. Oh, that's sad. Sadness.
Well, anyways, ending on a good note, join the Facebook group.
Yes.
You can also send us
good
an email.
Good conversations happening.
Ask Minority
on
Corner
there.
Anything. You can. But the Facebook group, there's such great stuff mm-hmm. happening. It just gives me life. That's it for us this week. So
yes. Rate us on iTunes. Positive ratings, please.
Yeah, send us an email if you've got some criticism. We'll take it, but you don't need to, like, you need to broadcast it to the
yeah,
world.
Yeah, we'll definitely take it. Don't expose our nasty bits. All right.
Have
bye,
a good week,
guys.
Y'all.
Okay, bye.
Are you sad and confused about world politics? Worried about the upcoming inevitable nuclear war? Or maybe a rat is living in your house? There's a rat living in my house. How do you get rid of a rat from a house? Why not immerse yourself in a completely fictional, imagined podcast for the beef and dairy industries? It works for me. The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is the number one podcast for those involved, or just interested, in the production of beef animals and dairy herds. Don't worry, it's funnier than it sounds. Find us at beefanddairynetwork.com or maximumfun.org, or wherever you get your podcast from. Oh God, there's the rat. Oh God.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.